Money and markets. Well, we're all Fed watchers now. We've had several years of quantitative easing, and literally we're watching the entire global financial and commodities markets organize and trade off the every word from the Fed. Things got much more Fed watchy in June with the taper tantrums we've talked about. This is combined, of course, the big mystery is when will quantitative easing three, QE3, be over? And that's added to the uncertainty is when will Ben Bernanke step down as chairman of the Fed and who will replace him? The silly business reached a crescendo this week with the number one article in the Wall Street Journal earlier this week being something called Obama's Fed Circus. And the politicking over Ben's replacement really had reached a level of sort of political circus. Lots of people clearly lobbying for Lawrence Summers, the former head of Treasury. And if you look at Summers' role with engineering the housing bubble or the $4 trillion missing from the federal government or the suppression of the gold price, the thought of Larry Summers being the next Fed chairman is just unimaginable. But there you have it. Lots of talking back and forth about that. In the middle of everything, the Federal Court of Claims ruled that Bernanke had to testify in Hank Greenberg's latest lawsuit over the Fed takeover of AIG. That's, to me, really a comment on where things are, that Greenberg could be pulled into, or that Bernanke could be pulled into testify in Greenberg's case. But what it means is that the tensions in Washington over this particular appointment and what the Fed does is reaching a new level of tension. And so we have on Wednesday the Federal Open Market Committee meeting for 2 hours and announcing, yes, they will continue $85 billion of purchases every month. As you know, my theory is that they've pretty much pulled in the fraudulent paper, and now it's really a question of when the markets can tolerate bringing the paper in. The market response, the S&P hit 1,700 and above for the first time. If you look at the charts, and let's look at the charts, Justin has some great slides and charts up on the Instant Teleseminar if you're watching, and I encourage you to take a look at them. But if you look at the charts, not much else is doing well. The media keeps highlighting how well the S&P is doing, and so we tend to have a notion that the markets are doing well. But just about everything else is struggling. Bonds are struggling. Gold is, and precious metals are staying down. The emerging markets are down as the pendulum swings back to the development markets. Dr. Farrell, in the interview that we did with him this evening, we talk a lot about that pendulum swinging back and what it's about. China has announced that they are doing an audit of government debt. That includes all their local government agencies. That's a very big deal. China's legal and financial infrastructure is widely distrusted on the world stage. And if you've ever spent any time in China, you would understand why. The Chinese are very, they're extremely entrepreneurial, but they can run ahead of the kind of legal and financial infrastructure you need. The new leadership really does seem bent on reform, and if they are successful and manage to get real sort of financial and legal controls in place for the kind of infrastructure you need to grow the growth potential that China has, if they're successful in that, and Chinese infrastructure, particularly the intellectual infrastructure, becomes powerful, it's going to really help fuel China as a new global leader. Anyway, but the local governments in China borrowed heavily as part of keeping growth going during the financial crisis. The last audit published in 2011 showed the local government debt at U.S. about $1.7 trillion, and that number is a very important percentage of total bank lending in China. So an audit of the local government units is going to have a big, or could have a big impact on the banking sector in China. China is not the only federal government hitting on local governments. We are watching a tremendous effort in the United States to, at the federal level and at the leadership level, to really go after state and local governments and pension funds in a way which is highly political and not anywhere near based in the facts and evidence, I think. Part of this is kicked off by using Detroit as a whipping boy. There's a new and very, of course, we have Detroit in the equivalent of bankruptcy, and all sorts of things are going on. But the financial manager now has wide latitude to do many things in terms of the obligations to retirees and to the unions. And it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. This effort to target the pension funds has big implications, not just for retirees, but for local taxpayers. Because the pension contributions could go far in terms of how they hit the budgets and how that hits services. So this is something that has impact for all of us. And finally, there's implications for the municipal bond market. We see Meredith Whitney back on the financial press talking about the extent to which the municipal bond market could be impacted. If you haven't listened to the interview we did, Joe Mysak from Bloomberg, on the municipal bond market, very much worth listening to. I think a much more measured presentation. But we do have municipal areas that are in trouble. And if anything, the reason they're in trouble is because of bad behavior on the federal government's part. This is a little bit like watching the rapist blame the victim. We had the financial coup shift assets out of the country in ways that really harmed the municipalities. Of course, the municipalities were encouraged to do all sorts of bad things during the housing bubble, which bubbled their revenues. But the burst left them in trouble. It really left the pension funds in trouble, who'd bought a great deal of the mortgage paper and, of course, have big treasury positions, treasury securities, so they've been drained by the debasement as well. So the fraud bubble's engineered by the federal government, and then the debasement and the lowering of interest rates to finance the federal government have both drained the pension funds. At the same time, a lot has been done to stabilize most of them. And if you look at their problems, I would say the last thing contributing, or very low on the list contributing to any financial problems, is profligate spending on the behalf of state and local employees. So it's very interesting. Michael Hudson had a piece recently where he pointed out, you know, every time we say there's no money for retirees, we don't seem to have any problem coming up with trillions to give away to the banks or to fund war in the Middle East. So there is a double standard in terms of when we do and do not have money. It's one of the things that Dr. Farrell and I talk a lot about in the interview this week. The idea that we're leaving the state, and not just state and local, but the retirement obligations in the old legacy systems over on one side of the economy, and then we have a financial coup d'etat that pulls $40 trillion out and puts it in the new economy, a.k.a. the breakaway civilization, and suddenly, voila, there's no money. But of course, there's plenty of money to finance all the things going on over on the new side. The Economist had a series of articles this week, and including great. If you want to do a hit on the state and local pension funds, they did a very slick job. It's not backed up by the facts, but it's certainly very slick. One of the things they mention is the quote unquote vibrancy of the private sector versus this clunky, old, inefficient, corrupt government. If you look at the real facts of the case, the amount of money that has been used to subsidize or transfer assets at below market value to the private sector to create that vibrancy is absolutely enormous. And the thought that somehow government is inefficient and the private sector is vibrant and efficient is so in defiance of the facts that it is, as my uncle, who used to be a colonel in the Army, would say, it's stupefying. Just remember, government has had a negative return on taxpayers because it's funding a very subsidized positive return over there in the quote-unquote vibrant private sector. Not to say that there aren't a lot of wonderful things going on in the private sector. There are. Science and technology. I finally was inspired with our wonderful production team to sit down today and write a little piece called Out of Control, Control. The efforts to control the population are really completely over the top. You almost don't know what words to find. I struggle to find words to communicate how just out of control it is. There is a series of different stories, and I wanted to bring them all together. We have the NSA, of course, for the last several weeks telling us that they can listen to anything we say and keep a record of it through whatever medium, and all sorts of internet and social media also do the same, and of course through the back door provided to the NSA. Now, and you'll see these stories up on the blog, we have Harvard and members of the scientific community saying that they can direct the thoughts of animals and also implant false memories in people. Now, what this means is that there's all sorts of technology to influence or insert thoughts and cause us to act in various ways, but it also means that enforcement agencies or courts can call up experts to testify that our testimony suddenly is not the case. They're false memories. Now, you think that's bad enough. Now we have DARPA slapping out contracts to simply come up with ways of inserting new chromosomes in our body and filling it up so that they can reinvent our DNA to their liking and do it not with our permission, but simply just by spraying overhead. And to think that's outrageous, I sent my little post on Out of Control, Control to John Rappaport, and he wrote back and he said, oh, DARPA is also pursuing a mind control project to detect how the brain accepts or rejects propaganda narratives of events. Now, all of this, of course, is being funded with our tax dollars, which makes it all the more amazing that we're financing literally, I just don't even know what to say about them. But check out that blog post, because it's, if you ever thought that the situation wasn't out of control, there it is. The hit on the IRS continues, and if you've ever been frustrated with paying taxes, don't fall into thinking this is a good thing. When you get these kind of political efforts to really work over an agency like this, if anything, you're going to end up with an agency that's much more political. This is a condition that creates a lot of fear, and when that happens, lots of things, crazy things can go on, but it's one, it'll be very interesting to see where it goes. You have efforts in Congress to come up with major tax reform. Again, I certainly don't think it's going to go anywhere this year, but we'll see what happens. Wall Street's role in stockpiling commodities keeps coming up. A number of articles posted on the blog. And it's interesting that it's doing, because generally those stockpiling helps to prop up prices. Of course, commodities, another asset class completely in the doghouse. And it's interesting to see that it's happening when commodities are really at the bottom. Finally, one headline, and I just have to bring this up because to me this is one of the most shocking stories I've ever seen. Homeland Security has announced that they are building their new headquarters at the St. Elizabeth site in D.C. And I literally, I'm going to have to give you some background to describe this story. St. Elizabeth was a mental institute in Washington, and it was a mental institute that off and on has been the subject of investigative reporters pointing out that some very scary and unusual things have been going on there. One story, for example, is Kelly O'Meara's story of she studied the people who've been buried at St. Elizabeth's. You had a lot of patients who died there, didn't have families to take care of their burial arrangements. They were buried at St. Elizabeth's. And what she went into the National Archives and discovered that they all seemed to automatically die 6 months magically after they'd entered St. Elizabeth's. And she came to me and said, what could possibly explain this? And I said, what could possibly explain this is that the funding ran out from the municipal government to pay for them. And so, you know, they were disposed of. So, but the rumors of things going on at St. Elizabeth's are quite amazing. Anyway, I wanted to read a speech once attributed to Chief Seattle, and this is the end of his speech. It's a one I love so much. He said, "When the last red man shall have perished, and the memory of my tribe shall have become a myth among the white men, these shores will swarm with the invisible dead of my tribe. And when your children's children think themselves alone in the field, the store, the shop, upon the highway, or in the silence of the pathless woods, they will not be alone. In all the earth there is no place dedicated to solitude. At night, when the streets of your cities and villages are silent and you think them deserted, they will throng with the returning hosts that once filled them and still love this beautiful land. The white man will never be alone. Let him be just and deal kindly with my people, for the dead are not powerless." And I would say to the Department of Homeland Security, I believe that the dead are not powerless. And if you look at who the dead at St. Elizabeth are, I find it quite remarkable. And for those of us who want decentralization, it's probably a good sign that the Department of Homeland Security will be there, because I would think it'd be a very hard place to build a successful culture. Let me just jump. Bradley Manning acquitted this week of aiding the enemy for giving secrets to WikiLeaks. That's very good news. He was found guilty on other counts, so the legal slugfest continues, but I think that was a very positive development. Kudos to the judge for deciding that. Anyway, that's it for Money and Markets.